Your ongoing support for public broadcasting is more important than ever. Thanks for doing what you can to keep public radio strong where you live. Sometimes it takes a journey to find your way home. That was the case for Teresa Bruce, whose extraordinary childhood included a road trip all the way from Oregon to Bolivia down the Pan American Highway. She wrote about it in her book called The Drive, Searching for Lost Memories on the Pan American Highway.
I like to say that really what turned out to be the greatest adventure of my life began with the greatest tragedy of my parents. They lost my little brother, John John, in an accident at home. And, you know, everybody responds differently to grief. In my family, my dad in particular, just needed to run, to escape. And so he was a truck driver, he built a camper, and we hit the road. And he just wanted to drive to the end of the world. And I was about six, and my little sister was only two, and we were sort of stowaways in the back seat and along for the ride.
And your dad built a homemade camper. Can you just paint a picture of what it's like? It's a family of four in a rickety camper and long, treacherous roads.
Well, rickety is kind of a generous assessment of what the camper looked like. To me, as a little kid, it looked like Frankenstein's monster. It was this huge thing that he built out of wood and sheet metal, and it weighed 14,400 pounds. And if you know anything about campers, that's about 12,000 pounds too many. So the thing just broke down literally 61 times over the course of a year. And partly it was because we were traveling over the Pan American Highway, which is this highway system, not really a unified highway, but a highway system that connects the capitals of Latin America. But in 1973, it wasn't all the way completed. Parts of it were really damaged by an earthquake that had happened in Nicaragua. So it was a real unknown. And my parents literally didn't know anything other than what had been in a National Geographic article years before.
And your dad would, as you wrote in the book, literally leave you and hitchhike to the nearest town when the camper would break down?
My most vivid memories were literally on the side of the road of the Pan American Highway, and we would have to, you know, put out flares and wave down drivers to avoid hitting it. Then we would eventually, he would get whatever part he needed to kind of limp into the next town, and then we'd go to a mechanic shop. And while he would be under the truck fixing it, my mother and sister and I would explore the neighborhoods. And these would be working class, real neighborhoods in 1970s Central America and South America. You know, despite the tense situations that we were in, because this was at the start of a lot of civil wars and disruptions in South America, the beauty of the continent really seeped in too. And I learned how to speak Spanish. And honestly, the people of Latin America were so good to us. They sensed that we were this Steinbeckian family and we were in trouble. And people along the way, ordinary people, not wealthy people, not well-traveled people, took us in and protected us and gave us food and took care of us when we were sick. And one time I had malaria. So even though it was tragic circumstances, it was actually a beautiful experience in the end and one that really became our family healing process.
Long story short, you didn't get to the end of the road down in Tierra del Fuego.
We abandoned the trip and moved on with life, but we never exactly knew what happened to this camper. And something from my past just kept bothering me. I just wanted to know where my childhood home was. Was it still out there? Because it was sort of all tangled up and losing my little brother and just wondering, you know, could I do a trip, an epic road trip like that, and find this only thing that had made me feel safe? And so after 9/11, when I met my husband, we decided we would give it a shot. We would retrace the journey using my father's 30-year-old maps and my mother, who had kept this little pink journal. It was more like a ship's log of everywhere we had stopped along the way. So we set out and sold everything we owned and gave up two careers and did what I bet you all of your listeners would love to do, which is just, you know, say goodbye and take a huge road trip.
Were you able to find anybody again that was part of your epic adventure when you were a little child, when you went back 30 years later?
The amazing thing is, yes, we were. My mother had written down sometimes just first names or the names of the children that we had played with, but she knew the places. So it would be, you know, León, Nicaragua, or San Salvador, El Salvador. And so we got the idea, you know, I want to try and find these people because honestly, without them, we wouldn't have made it. So the first one that we found was this dentist in El Salvador who had taken care of my little sister who had fallen out of the camper and broken her front teeth. I mean, this guy literally saved us and was so good to us and his wife, Yolanda, and his children. We stayed with them for a week. And so when we went on the second trip, I had his address and we tried to find it. And we ended up hiring a cab and we followed him through the congested streets of San Salvador, El Salvador, which was at the time a pretty dangerous place. And we pulled up to this house and this old gentleman opens the door and he doesn't recognize me at first, but I showed him my mother's journal and he read the writing of his late wife, whom had inscribed the journal. Tears welled up in his eyes and he said, "Teresita, look what has come back to me." And it was just amazing. So we had these beautiful moments of reconnection that in the end were more important to me than finding the camper. It became clear on this trip that was really what I needed to do, was to thank these people that had shown such kindness to travelers.
That's Teresa Bruce, author of The Drive, talking about retracing the route her family took down the Pan-American Highway back in the 1970s. If they had a radio with them in their rickety camper, they may have heard some hits by Buffy St. Marie. Back then, Buffy was busy writing and performing songs that would be covered by the likes of Donovan, Elvis Presley, and Janis Joplin. I spoke with the legendary singer-songwriter and activist about her latest album, Medicine Songs, and about her life in music and her hopes for the future.
I'm kind of an overgrown kindergarten kid. I'm a natural musician. I never have been able to learn how to read music, although I tried three times, and finally I found out that I'm actually dyslexic in music, and who ever heard of that? But, you know, you're talking about me as an indigenous person and all. My biggest songs have been about everybody. The songs that have made me enough money to support a career as an activist person have been love songs. Up Where We Belong, you know, won me an Academy Award. It was the theme song for the score and the song to An Officer and a Gentleman. And Until It's Time for You to Go, which was recorded by, you know, everybody, Sonny and Cher and Bobby Darin Roberta Flack and Elvis Presley and the Arthur Fiedler and the Boston Pops Orchestra and Barbara Streisand. Everybody recorded that song. And yet most people don't associate it with me because the writer of a pop song sometimes doesn't get a lot of news about it. You know, there's so many different kinds of music and so many fans. You're just glad that people are enjoying it.
That's it, isn't it? It just must be gratifying that people choose to listen to your music, that it resonates with people.
It's very exciting. And I mean, since you're all about travel, I've had the great, great privilege of traveling all over the world. I mean, I was playing in Hong Kong and Australia and all over Canada, the U.S. and all over Europe. And just to continually grow and be informed by the people that you happen to run into in all these different countries, it really gives you it gives me a sense of forgiveness for human frailty, because most people are only reading the headlines in the news of their own countries. But when you're lucky enough to travel, you get to kind of read between the headlines of any one country and any one genre of music. You realize, there's more to it than just what my family may have been listening to while I was growing up.
Buffy, you were just iconic back in the 1960s when civil rights was such a big deal. There's a need for that kind of voice today. Just a comment on things that you thought were really important back in the 60s that we really need to be mindful of as we are faced with some amazing challenges in our times.
Well, I was privileged to live in the 60s. I really was. And yet you may have noticed, if you ever check, I was absent during most of the big civil rights rallies. I was real good friends with Muhammad Ali, Stokely Carmichael, Dick Gregory. I brought Dick Gregory to my reservation in Saskatchewan in the 60s. You know, he had never seen poverty and injustice like that. He had never really thought about it. He was crying in the airplane on the way home. But he was very glad to have found out. So when everybody else was at the big photo ops and the giant rallies, which were so important in the 1960s having to do with civil rights, I was trying to cover the base that nobody else was covering, which was in Indian country. So, you know, there was a time when we thought that there'd never be an end to slavery, that women would never get the vote, that you'd never stop men from smoking on airplanes, you know, that Native American religion would never become legal. But all those things have happened. So in my perspective, you never, ever can give up hope. There are people doing good work today. There's always something to learn. So if you want to know about Native America or something else, don't be afraid to try and find out. The information is there. You might have to dig a little, but, you know, good for you that you have the get up and go to be curious and to want to make the world a better place. From where you are right now, it seems like it's all uphill and it'll take forever. But looking back on my 50 years of traveling around as a singer and an educator, I've seen tremendous progress, and I thank everybody who has helped with that. You know, just keep it going. And you were saying,
what an honor to speak with Buffy St. Marie. Her music and activism have made such an impact on so many. These are the kinds of conversations I look forward to having each week on Travel with Rick Steves with travelers of all stripes. I come away inspired, invigorated, and frankly, more hopeful about our world. That's what travel gives me, and it's also what public media gives me, perspectives that make me a better citizen of my local community, of my country, and of my world. No matter where you call home, I know you rely on public radio too. We really need this kind of radio programming to help us understand the unprecedented challenges facing our nation and planet today. On public radio, the only agenda we're pushing is a better understanding of our world. I like working in public broadcasting. It's an environment where people respect differences between cultures and where we strive to humanize people from different backgrounds and gain empathy for their perspective. Rather than fear diversity, we celebrate it. Rather than building walls, we believe we'll all be safer by building bridges instead. Bridges of understanding. This membership campaign isn't a drag. It's a celebration. It's a reminder that this station is the one place on the dial that is not shaped by corporate needs. This station's agenda is public, and that means you. Public radio is not a charity. It's a service. If you enjoy this service and can't afford to help out, that's fine. This is for everyone. It's public radio. But if you're consuming this service, value it, and can afford to help pay for it, it's only right to do so. Please, put a price on how much you value this programming and make a contribution to this station. It just takes a couple minutes. It's actually fun. And every time you listen from now on, you'll do so with a better feeling because you are a supporting member. If you haven't had a chance to do your part already, can we hear from you right now? Public radio has never been more important, and it just can't happen without your financial support. Thank you.